Do you want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Well, good evening, and welcome to the second and final hour of the show. It is the Tuesday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are, of course, powered by SID Media. +27734703520. That is +27734703520. Especially for those of you who continue to listen to us outside of South Africa, that's the number that you can use. Please start with the +27 when you send us a message, right? We'd certainly like to hear from you. But if you're in South Africa, it is 073. So you don't have to do the +2, what. But thank you. Thank you for joining us this evening. Really appreciate it. It is Tuesday. That means it is Technology and Innovations Tuesday. And today, we're talking about food technology. Food technology, right? Ensuring that food is safe for consumption is a paramount concern. Now, food scientists are involved in identifying potential hazards, both chemical and microbial. Okay, that's an interesting one. I'd like to hear a lot about that one. And developing, of course, methods to minimize them. So Dr. Minenhle Khoza joins us to share a little bit about her work in the food technology industry and what that is about. Because for me, I know nothing. I'm a novice in this space, and she's joining us this evening to tell us a little bit about that. Doc, I hope I'm not jinxing it here. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks. Good evening to the listeners at home. It's a pleasure to be here. So you are not jinxing it.
Okay.
The nail on the head.
Ah, look at that. I thought I was just going off the tangent. I was like, yo, this is becoming a very, very interesting one there. All right. Now, tell me, Doc, I want to start here, right? Before we go anywhere, please tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this industry.
Okay, so I am Minenhle. My surname is Khoza.
Yes.
I am a lecturer at the University of Johannesburg.
Okay.
Under the Department of Biotechnology and Food Technology. Mm. I'm also a deputy director of the Center for Innovation, for sure. Innovative Food Research,
yes.
Right, which is under the Faculty of Science at UJ.
Yeah.
So I also coordinate work integrated learning along with my colleague Tsebiso. So my interest in food technology started in actually first year, right?
Okay.
I came from a township school. I didn't know about food technology. I only knew that there was microbiology, and that's what I was going to study.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the course was full. So now I needed space, you know, but it was during those times when you could still do the walk-in.
Yes.
So I qualified for the course and I learned about the course in the course. So it kind of chose me, but it was a good choice because then the microbiology that I so wanted is also a very crucial part of being a food technologist.
Ooh.
So that's my story with food technology.
Oh, that's lovely. It's a career that I think a lot of us don't know about, particularly the Black nation.
Yeah, so like I'm saying that I just knew about microbiology.
Okay.
You know how we all know these courses that everybody does.
Okay.
Like, this one is an engineer, so I want to be an engineer.
Yes, then, yes.
But when I got there, because it wasn't a popular course by then, there was space in the course. And then I got to learn about the course when I was in it. And it's so different right now. We get flooded by applications in food technology.
Okay.
It has become one of those popular courses that everybody wants to study,
actually,
technology and biotechnology.
Wow.
I think now people are interested in making food safe for consumption.
Yes.
They are interested in innovating,
yes.
Right? Coming up with innovative ways of processing or storing food products. So I think young people these days are very woke.
Like myself
in 2011, I didn't know anything about this.
My producer, when we were talking about this, like, wait, what is this thing now that you want us to talk about here? She's like, no, you're going to find out. Don't worry. So I'm very excited about this one. But thank you so much for telling us a little bit about yourself and that background. Mm-hmm. Food technology. Now, let's get into that. What are we exactly talking about?
Okay, so when we are talking about food technology. We are not talking about a chef.
Oh.
We are not talking about a dietitian.
Okay.
We are talking about a scientist who studies the microbiological, the chemical, and the physical composition of food. And mainly we are studying these compositions for us to identify areas in which we can prevent food spoilage and thus increase the shelf life of the food products. We are also looking at areas of making convenient food products for people. So, for example, people who are staying at rest, they normally don't have time to be cooking the whole time when they get back from school. So they need food that is convenient for them. So food technology is about that, making sure that the food is still nutritious, but yet convenient for the consumer, right? And also understanding that consumers want information to be communicated to them. So there's also that legislative part of food technology, right? Following the regulations and working closely with the Department of Health to ensure that this food products doesn't cause a health burden to the healthcare system of the country. Because if there's a burden on the healthcare system, then it means that the economy of the country is not going to be good, right? Because then more money has to go to hospital beds. So it's all about that, ensuring that there is accessibility to food, but more than anything, that the food is safe and wholesome for consumption. So it includes a lot of things. There's new product development, right, where we are looking at what products are there in the market right now. How can we make them better? Can we fortify them with more nutrients so that maybe a person can get their daily allowable minimum nutrients that they should consume? Or it could be about quality assurance, right? Assuring that the quality of the food product is good. So, for example, if I am a milk producing company, then I get milk from a farmer. Then, as a food technologist, I will then need to assess the milk. Did the farmer not add any antibiotics to the milk to the milk? Meaning that was the cow not sick when it was being milked? If it was, then I have to stop that. People shouldn't consume that. But if the milk is good or is clean, then we go forward. Is the milk not spoiled? It means now I have to use my scientific knowledge, check the pH of the milk. If the pH is, let's say, at 4, I know that the milk is sour. Then I reject that batch. But if the pH is, let's say, around 6.75, then I know, okay, this is almost at neutral pH, which is perfect. Then we can go ahead. From there, I'm going to use microbiology. Remember I said we assess the microbiological, the chemical, and the physical composition. So the microbiology now comes in. I'm looking at the microbiological load. How much of the microorganisms are there in the milk? Would they cause spoilage of the food product? Is it microorganisms that are inherent in milk, or is it something else that shouldn't be in milk? Right? So we do all of those tests, and then we will also test for the freezing point of the milk, for example, to check if the farmer not add extra water just to increase the quantity of the milk, right? So we look for those things. Also, physical assessment, is the milk the color that it should be? Obviously, if the milk comes to me and it's now green, there's something wrong, right? So we look at all of those things from farm to fork, actually, because even the packaging material, once we are now labeling, if it's milk, once we are labeling it, there's regulations specified by government, which you will find under the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform, right, or Department of Health. So there's regulations in terms of how you label your food products. With those things that you see in a packaging material, from the name of the product to the name of the manufacturer to the list of ingredients at the back, how they are listed, there's regulations around that. And then it's our job to ensure that that information is there. If there's allergens, for example, the example I was making about milk, it is an allergen to certain people. So you have to say this product contains cow's milk so that if a person is allergic to that, they know and make an informed decision not to consume that product. So that's what we do in a nutshell.
They have this so-called snobbish problem. They only drink milk that is what's the word again?
Lactose.
Yeah, like lactose intolerant. Like, What is that? What is that, Doc? What is lactose intolerant?
So it's when you can't actually digest lactose within your body, and then you will probably, when you consume the milk, you start farting.
Okay.
So your stomach becomes upset.
That's basically a big problem. Yeah, it's definitely.
So it's not a snobbish problem. It's there. It's just that.
Yeah.
I will say African people, we didn't know that it was there.
Yes.
You just think, no, it's not there. But people are now becoming more informed. That's why you see more and more people are now saying,
yeah,
I'm lactose intolerant,
yeah,
because they have the term to put to it now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm being silly, right? It's like those people that actually buy coffee. You know how when they hold that coffee mug, you almost think like they are holding money. It's like there's something about holding that cup of coffee in a certain way, and you're like, "Hi, bo, kahleni, guys." You know, so same as this lactose intolerant people. And then, like I said, I'm just being silly about that one. Just wanted to understand what that means. So what are we solving for here, Doc? In other words, with food technology, what is the problem that we are solving for here?
Okay, so here we are trying to ensure that there's food security, that we have sustainable food supplies, but not just any food that is healthy for consumption.
Okay.
That's the problem we are trying to solve, that, to ensure that as a nation, as a species of people, we always have food that is good for our well-being.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, food is what fuels our body. So if we don't eat right, then you can imagine what's going to happen to the country, to the world at large. Right? So that's the problem we are solving.
Okay.
Ensuring that we give people nutritious food.
Yeah,
right?
Do we have a lack in South Africa? Or maybe if you look at the SADC region, for example, because that's how far we broadcast. Is there a problem of lack of nutritious food, as it were?
I'll say yes and no.
Okay.
Right. What I notice in our region is that we have a lot of food waste, and then food end up not reaching those who actually need the food products.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of maybe really shortage. I just think we waste our food products a lot, and hence there's a lot of innovations in food technology to try and preserve this food product so that they are distributed to everyone who needs the food. Because even in your household, I'm sure when you buy your fresh produce, most of the time it even stays, we buy more than we need, stays in the refrigerator, and then it gets spoiled. So our mission as food technologists is then to try and increase the shelf life of that product, or process it into a secondary product.
Yeah.
So for example, if you have apples, instead of you just having a fresh apple, we as food technologists will produce or process the fresh apple into a dried fruit, and also into a maybe juice, right? To try and increase the shelf life of that product. And by so doing, it means now, if you want to transport the apple, let's say, to a child who's in KZN from Johannesburg, it's going to be easier if it's in a form of juice than it would when it was in its fresh form, right? And then that's how we preserve the food products. But the child in KZN will still get all the nutrients that they are supposed to get from an apple. So I don't think we lack. I just think we
waste
our food. Yes, we waste, or our food spoils easily.
I think me now, Doc, I've got a different problem in terms of food that needs to be, at least its shelf life increased. Because, you know, when you stay alone, Doc, like you buy and then these things, you don't finish them. So that's my problem that I have. So I need something that's going to make this cabbage to live for 2 months, because that's how long it's going to take me to finish just one cabbage. Because I don't have the pressure of cooking, you know, those type of things. At least if you've got a family, you know, I suppose fresh produce would go by very quickly, because you need to cook for them and but I think I need this longer shelf life, you know, when you have such problems.
Yeah. So there is a branch, it's more biotechnology,
but
it's your genetically modified food products, and there's a whole lot of debates about that.
Some
people are for it, some people are not for it.
Yeah.
But those are some of the ways of increasing the shelf life of your fresh produce, right?
Yeah.
So that they stay longer, or so that they are convenient.
Yes.
Maybe you eating tangerines or nachos, and then the next thing, they don't have seeds inside, right? So those are like your GMO is.
Okay, that's much better. You spoke about in the process, right? There's often a need for you to say, nope, this ends here because it's not safe for human consumption. Or, you know, there's a very technical term that you use there. But I think there's microbiome something in there.
Microbiology.
Yeah, exactly, that you're like, no, this one is not safe for human consumption. Two questions. One, is there a level that's accepted of those microbiome thingies in there? That's one. And two, what is the role of ethics then in the process?
So there are levels. There's different types of microorganisms, right, yeah, that you would expect in different types of food products.
Yeah.
So, excuse me.
No problem.
So based on that, there's also legislations to say maybe for E. coli, there should be zero coloniforming units of E. coli, meaning you shouldn't find E. coli in your food product or salmonella and so on. There's always specifications. And then if you test in a product and you find that there's an X amount of that microorganism that shouldn't be there, then you can't process that food product. You need to discard it, right? So that nobody consumes it, because then it can cause health problems, and then you can even end up having outbreaks. Like you remember, in I think it was in 2018 when we had the listeria outbreak.
Yeah.
So it's all about controlling those microorganisms such that we don't get to a point where we have an outbreak and people are losing their lives, and now companies are being sued and all of that.
Okay. I think South Africans generally, we have this tendency of coming up with words, a catchphrase. Everyone knew COVID, even a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 60, 70-year-old. Listeriosis, namdiyazi doc. I know it very well. Not that I understand what it is, but I've heard because I lived within that time where everything was listeriosis. People were coming up with food. Does it have listeriosis? I didn't even know what that meant. But I just jumped on that on that train. So I remember very well that listeriosis. Would you say the whole industry is applying, I suppose, ethical practices? Or do we find that there is one or two cases where you find that people go to jail for lack of ethics and potentially endangering everyone?
Okay. So, like I said, when I introduced myself, I am a work integrated learning coordinator. So I work very closely with industry.
Yeah.
And to my knowledge, the industries that I work with, which is a huge group of companies, right, there is ethics, especially because the food industry is governed by laws. So for you to get a certification to say that your plant is ISO 22000 or FSSC certified, it means you should have followed certain specifications to ensure that the plant is clean, it is at the level where you can produce food.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that go on in the background.
Yeah.
Little things like putting nail polish, there's rules around that. So you can't put on nail polish, no makeup, no earrings, your wedding band shouldn't be there. So there's a lot of things that go on for you to get the food that you get, that you will end up getting as an end product. So even covering your hair, if you are a male, you cover your beard. If being nomsebenzi at home and you're wearing the traditional bracelets, you cover that with a bracelet cover. So there's a lot of things that happen in the food industry that look like minor things, but they actually protect you as a consumer and ensure that your food is handled in the way that it should be.
Yeah.
And besides your good manufacturing practices, which I've just mentioned, right, then there's also now the legislations of what should be in your food product, what shouldn't be there, the amounts. So even things like bread that you eat, there's rules in terms of how much salt should be there and how much salt shouldn't be there.
Mm.
Even in your snack products, there was a whole sodium reduction drive that was there based on legislation, right, to ensure that people don't have high blood pressure and all these other chronic diseases. So we always work closely with the Department of Health. So we don't just decide, okay, now I want to produce this, I'll just add this and that. There's a lot of research that goes into the food products before they get to the consumer. So also industry works closely with universities. If they are trying to produce something and maybe they don't have the capacity to test, they send their samples to universities, right, in the laboratories, and then they do some research on the product. For example, if we are saying there's Mhlonyana, for example, you remember when there was the whole COVID and everybody was using that plant, right? If you're going to be using that and you want to make claims that this is good for this and that and that and that, you first have to take it to a lab, you test for what you're saying it's good for before you even produce this food product that you will now be selling to everyone. So I think there is a lot of due diligence that goes on into the food products that we eat before we get them, especially if you get products from registered and certified companies. Right, then you will definitely eat what you are supposed to eat.
Yeah. So basically what's written on the label is to a far and greater extent the truth.
Yes, as long as the company is a reputable company. And I won't dispute that we have things like food fraud also in the food industry, right? It could be counterfeited goods whereby somebody is mimicking somebody else's label and packaging it somewhere else. Those things do happen. But to a larger extent, I think our food industry is quite intact.
That's beautiful. And I know from a regulation point of view, there's been, you know, different organizations that have purported or tried to, I suppose, push this thing of people knowing what's in their food and the type of different ingredients, whether it's sodium or whatever. Would you say those civil organizations also play a critical role in this particular work that's been done?
Yeah, they do. I mean, let's say if we are going to have a regulation or a new legislation, everybody gets involved before these things become gazetted. It goes into the internet. Everybody should have their say. They should say why they are saying that. So I think because we live in a democratic country, everybody's voice matters. And I think government goes by what the majority wants. So if the rules are such that the industry sees it fit that consumers should know what is in their product and the consumers also want to know what is in their products, then the government will go with that. And also not just considering what happens in South Africa, you must also remember that we export products to other countries. So when we send our products there, we should also be complying to whatever regulations that are there. So there's also those factors. But do as the food industry then work with the World Health Organization or with the Food and Drug Organization, right, to try and ensure that whatever we produce here complies also with the standards of the countries that we also trade with, right? And that's where departments like the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition would then come in.
Sure. Thank you for giving us comfort, Doc, because sometimes, you know, we don't even know what's in this food. And we don't even take the time to even look at what ingredients are in there. As long as it tastes very nice, then I'm telling you, I'm going in without thinking twice. So are there any food industry, I suppose food industries where there's more stringent processing and maybe even sanitary regulations that seem to be outpacing others?
Yes, I would say if you are producing food for infants, right? So that's a high risk area because infants, right, their immune system is not as strong as an adult's one. So you need to be extra careful there. The standards are very strict when we produce for infants, right? So things like your baby formula and so on, purity and those types of products.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that just warmed my heart. I don't know, for some reason. Maybe I love babies and cute little thingies there.
But
that's really nice. Oh, wow. That's really nice to know that at least we are prioritizing their kids. And I think I saw this other famous company. I won't mention their name. But I think a year or two ago, they were in some hot waters around the sodium content for the children. I don't know if you saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in such instances where they are found to be more than what is actually allowed or regulated, and vis-a-vis the fact that they're a big global company, what would be the normal way to deal with that? Is that now retracting all the products that are already in the stores, and then what's the cause and effect, and what follows after such things?
So they will retract, obviously, because it's now been tested and then it's above the allowable limit. And then now they can get a fine from, let's say, the Department of Health or Department of Agriculture, or whichever department it is that picked it up.
Mm.
And then they will need to go back to the drawing board and reformulate, ensure that they comply to industry specifications. Now, it depends also on the situation. Some, if maybe let's say people's kids died, then there's going to be litigation where now people are suing the company. And then obviously the company is making money. Now they'll have to trace who was the leader of the research and development department. Why didn't they pick this up according to legislation? Then that person can lose their job. So that's how it normally works.
Sure. What are some of the modern day techniques then, suppose from a processing point of view, that ensure that we do things the correct way, and I suppose we can then trace it back? There's technology, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, there are a lot of technologies that are used in the food industry. So, for example, in the baking space, we now, in our department at UJ, we are now using 3D printing, right? Mm. Looking at that, printing your cookies from a 3D printer.
Oh,
so it minimizes the handling from, like, touching the product, you know. So you just prepare your dough, you put it in a 3D printer, and then you get the shapes that you want. So it's also now using technology to offer you convenience as a food scientist, so that you produce whatever you want without contaminating it or potentially contaminating the product.
Yeah. Yes. Do you guys have in any way some or other bearing or impact on agricultural practices and how food is grown right from the primary sector there?
So our relationship with the Department of Agriculture or with people who are in the agricultural spaces, that obviously for us to process the food products to secondary products, we need them to plant something. If we are talking about meat that will be packaging or processing into biltong or into a sausage, they have to farm that. So those departments always work hand in hand, and you will notice that let's say in the space of food technology, some departments, Department of Agriculture, AgriCita, and so on, will even fund students who are doing food technology, because we understand that there's definitely a synergy. One discipline feeds into the other. So we do work hand in hand with the people who are in agriculture. And obviously, if we are talking about beef, if the cow or the cattle is not well fed, it's going to affect the type of end product that we are going to have once the cow has been slaughtered, you know. So we are always working hand in hand. You do find also food technologists who work in the agricultural space.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
Or like I was mentioning to you earlier on about the genetically modified organisms. So you can find biotechnologists or food technologists working in agricultural research, maybe working with certain plant seeds and so on.
Okay, all right. So as you draw towards the close, where do you see the trends in the next coming few years, particularly as food technologists, and the role that, I suppose, change in the market is kind of affecting the industry as well? Where do you see changes?
Okay. So what's happening in the food industry right now is that everybody is looking at the sustainable development goals, right? You have to be aware of those as a person who lives in one of the UN countries. So what's happening in the food industry is that everybody is now doing research that touches on the sustainable Development Goals. So if you look at the Center for Innovative Food Research, our research would be, because we are handling food, so it's your zero hunger, right, which is the SDG. It's also food products that promote good health and well-being, right? So we produce ready-to-eat nutritious food products. But more than anything, we are also looking at responsible consumption, right, and production. So we are seeing a lot of research where people are now looking at waste products. So, for example, when I was doing my master's degree, I was looking at marula pills. So you know marula, the fruit, right? Yes. And orange peels. So I was taking the peels and not the actual fruit, but the peels which are normally thrown away, and I was using them as antioxidants. So antioxidants are those products that will stop what we call oxidation reactions, which is basically making your oils smell rancid, or for the oils to go off, right? So I was trying to prevent that in salad dressing oils. So that's where research is going, where you look at what could be waste and how you can use it to get benefits, because there's a lot of nutrients even in those pills. That's why when we grew up, they would say you must eat the orange peel when we have flu. As much as our parents didn't know how to explain it in a scientific way, but when you go into your research, you actually realize that if you're talking about antioxidants, they are saturated there in your pills. That can be a source, but usually in industry that gets thrown away, it becomes waste. So instead of that being waste, we look at ways of extracting more biological compounds from there and then making use of those. So that's where research is going. And of course, consumers want greener things. It has to be light in this and that. And they, like you mentioned in somewhere in the segment, that consumers want to see what is in their food product. So that's where it's going. Transparent packaging, right? Where you are transparent to the consumer to say, this is what is in the product, and this is how much of it is in there. Do you still want to consume the product or not? Then a consumer gets to make a decision.
Personal question as we end, which is the last one. Do you sometimes look at the food that's presented in front of you in restaurants and be like, what's in here? You know,
I think it goes with the job, because it's now a part of me. I do think about those things, right? In the fridge, I'm looking at the temperature and I'm thinking, I wonder what has grown in this milk. So it does happen that your brain becomes wired like that.
Okay. So Manje, do you have to, I suppose, even though you're looking at it and you're wondering, like, it's fine, man, let me just eat. I'm at a restaurant. Let me just eat, you know.
It depends. Maybe if it's in a restaurant and I have a choice not to eat it, I see that it's not good for my consumption.
Then you don't.
But if it's at home where there's now emotions attached, that's where it becomes tricky, because you don't want to offend the family member. But it's also sometimes a point of educating to say, no, as much as you've cooked this cabbage that was green and is now pale, you've removed all of the nutrients, so there's no need for me to consume this. But you obviously say it in a constructive way, right? You teach a person, rather boil this for a minimum amount of time so that we get to the nutrients, right? So it's always a point of educating, even though at home they always have this thing that, Minantle is a food technologist. We are pega. She can cook. Give it to this one. And that's the misconception. Not at chef. So, but as soon as people hear food, they then translate that to being a chef.
No, you did dispel it from the very beginning. Listen, Andizi, this is not what I do, right? Now, last one, Doc, there, and I'm just throwing it in as I think about it right now. Here in South Africa, we've got this tendency. Milk spoils, and you say, amas, man, so ila is amas. Are we endangering ourselves or what?
I would say, if milk is spoiled, just discard the milk and then go and buy amas. If you want amas, eat amas. Because the next thing you you don't know what's happening to the milk as it spoils.
Yeah.
And if you consume that, there's no company that you are going to go and sue because they specifically stated, consume this from this date to that date, right? Or it's best before this date.
Yeah.
So if you consume that beyond that, you are just putting your life at risk. So I wouldn't say that's a good practice.
Yeah, save. Are we trying to save, Doc? We just
At whose expense would you rather save 10 rand for milk and then go and pay a huge hospital bill? Because even if you go to a public hospital, you may think it's for free, but it's really not for free. Somebody is paying that bill.
Fantastic. Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts there as we close on this one?
No, I'd like to say people should read their labels, try to find out what the information on the labels mean, right? So that they can make safe decisions, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes we are allergic to food products and we don't even know it.
Yeah.
Or there's certain allergens that we don't know about. So it would be great if human beings, South Africans and people in the SADC region would get familiar with reading what is in their labels and questioning what is there.
Thank you so much, Doc. We wish you nothing but the best. And I know we're going to touch base with you once again in the near future. But we just want to say thank you, Nkosi Siyabulela, for your time and may God bless you.
Okay. Thank you for having me. Do have a lovely evening.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Bye. That was our good doctor, Dr. Minenhle Khoza, telling us a little bit about this thing. You know, I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, I have been schooled, like properly schooled. And if I was to add anything here, I'd be lying. Thank you, Doc.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.